Sure.
I haven't been thought of, and, you know, some may not have thought to ask it and so forth. And a lot of the other students may have not thought to ask the question, you know, and you've been through it before. So. You know what? Oh, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. Okay. Yeah, chapter 18, then we'll have a grand paradigm to form after the whole works. Then we get third to Quincy, beginning next semester. That will be lots of fun.
Is that going to, third question is going to be the first part of the next semester?
That's where it's always worked out in the past, and that's where it'll work out this time, too. We might even talk about it a bit before next semester.
How much time do we have?
We've got a full week, one full week after this, and then we can, well, see, in this class we'd have two more, week and 2 days class time. We've got six more sessions, and we'll have one test during that time, probably. So.
Don't worry, we heard that.
Yeah. I knew your ears would be sensitive to that.
Well, we'll see. We'll probably through the material today that we'll be covering on it, so we'll try to adjust it to what fits your schedules the best.
Give you some opportunity to vote on it or whatever. Okay, today we'll start with chapter 18 here. Unless there's any other questions on chapter 17 and the middle voice and the forms that we were looking at in those exercises. I think we pretty well handled everything yesterday. It's chapter 18. We've got the future, middle, and passive to deal with now. We've had the present, middle, and passive, although we really haven't talked much about the middle, but it's the same as passive. And the imperfect, middle, and passive, we've had the aorist, middle, and passive, active, middle, and passive. Now, all we have left to handle as far as these basic tenses we've had is the future, middle, and passive. And this chapter will deal with that. It'll also deal with what are called deponent verbs and with the verb aimee. So let's look at section 134. The forms of the future middle and future passive of luo are given below. First look at that column for future middle. Lusomai, luse, lusetai, lusomata, luseste, and lusontai. Do you recognize anything there, I hope? The ending system, for one. Where have you seen those endings before? Omai, a, etai, omata, esta, ontai. Huh? Yes, we saw it on the present and middle and passive, actually. We didn't really call it middle and passive then, but we saw it in the present passive, and it's actually present and present, middle and passive endings. And so, and then our stem is what? Well, it's luo plus the sigma, just like we've seen for the future. Remember, our normal future forms were lu plus the sigma plus the primary active endings that we saw before, and the very first endings we ever looked at. Now, it's the same thing except that we just put the passive, middle, and primary, middle, and passive endings, as they're called, and I'll give you that terminology today if we have the time. Omai, e, etai, omata, esta, ontai. So really nothing new there, just except a different set of endings. And it's a predictable set of endings, you might say. Because it follows the analogy of what the, if you compare the present and the future in the active, then in the middle, it's going to do basically the same thing. You'll get middle endings now instead of, middle or passive endings now instead of active endings, but the stem will be the same. Okay, now future passive, luthesomai, luthese, luthesetai, luthesomatha, luthesesta, and luthesontai. Looking at the endings, first of all, what do you notice? Same endings. Same endings for middle and passive. But, of course, the only way you could tell the difference between these is the stem change. There is a stem change. And for luo, it basically involves adding theta, eta, sigma. But that's not the most general way to describe it. There's a more general way to describe it, and that will follow here in the next section, as you'll see. Or the section following, I should say. So, section 135, the forms of the future middle are obtained from the second principal part. Now, the second principal part, remember, was the future active form. That was the second principal part. Remember, the future had enough irregularities that they had to make it a separate principal part. And for luo, it's real simple. You just add a sigma. But for other verbs, it's not always that simple. But you form the future middle on the same base that you form the future active on. So you take the second principal part, and the base is found by dropping the omega off this form. There would have been an omega on it because the principal parts are defined as the first person singular active forms. And so you drop the omega off that to get rid of the ending and put a different set of endings on. So the base is found by dropping the omega off this form, and the following endings are added. And these endings, as you will see, as we've already noted, are the same as the endings we saw for the passive, middle and passive in the present. It will be seen that these are the same endings of the present passive, which also functions as the present middle. So we're going to call them present middle or passive endings from now on. Okay, section 136, the forms of the future passive are obtained from the sixth principal part. See, this is the more general way of describing the future passive. This is why we didn't cover the future passive earlier, because we had to cover the aorist passive, which is the sixth principal part, because that is what the future passive is built on. If you've got the aorist passive, the sixth principal part, what you do to the aorist passive in order to form this future passive is to drop, it says by removing the augment, so you chop the augment off, because futures don't have augments. Secondly, you drop the final nu. Only the nu on this, you see, on the aorist passive form, the sixth principal part, you're going to have something ending in eta nu. And it may or may not have a theta before that. You know, the first aorist have a theta and the second aorist don't. But they'll all have eta nu, because that's the ending for the first person singular. Now, what you'll do to form the future passive is to drop the nu off of that form, only the nu, and then add a sigma in its place. So drop the nu off, put a sigma there, and then add the system of endings. Add the same endings that you've seen before, these present, middle, and passive endings. So the three things, number one, drop the augment, number two, drop the final nu, and three, add the sigma to the base, and then add these same endings. Thus, from L-luthane, we obtain luthane by removing the augment. So L-luthane was the sixth principal part for luo, aorist passive form. So you drop off the augment, that gives you luthane. Then you drop off the nu, that gives you luthe. Then you add a sigma, that gives you luthase. And then you add your endings, luthasomai, luthase, and so forth. So, relatively simple process. Now, why is it described this way rather than saying, just take the present base and add theta, eta, sigma to it? The reason is that theta isn't always there, because it's built on that second sixth principal part. So suppose you had a second aorist passive, for example. And here, I guess he doesn't talk about one specifically, but if you had grapho, for example, the sixth principal part of grapho was what? Anybody remember? What would be the sixth principal part for grapho? Yeah, egraphane. No theta on it. It's a second aorist. Okay, so at graphane, what we do there now, following this, if we wanted to get the future passive for it, at graphane would be drop the augment, so you get graphane, drop the new, you get graphe, add a sigma, you get graphase, and then you add your endings, graphaseomai, graphase, graphasetai, and so forth. Okay, so that's the reason why we focus on the sixth principal part, because that will take care of any irregularities automatically. The future passive is built on the very same form, same principal part that the aorist passive is. So whatever irregularities occur in the aorist passive will also occur in the future passive. And if a verb has a second aorist passive, it will also have a second future passive, because the theta will not be there. Okay, so that's the way to... Now, if it's a nice, clean, regular verb like luo, then it just amounts to adding theta, eta, sigma. But to cover all cases, we need to recognize that it's built from six principal part. Questions, anyone, on this? But the ending system's the same. So between future middle and future passive, we do have a distinction in the forms, and we can tell the difference between a future middle and a future passive. With the present and with the imperfect, there's no difference between middle and passive forms. Context has to decide it. With the future and the aorist, though, the aorist will have aorist middle and aorist passive separate forms, and the future now has future middle and future passive. And the difference between future middle and future passive is not the endings, it is the base. The difference between the aorist passive, aorist middle and aorist passive may be both base and endings. Certainly endings, in some cases both base and endings, if it has to be a second aorist, you know, if one's a first aorist and one's a second aorist, for example. Passive. Yes?
Just explicitly stated then, in the second aorist in the active, mm-hmm. it, it, is formed due to a stem change.
Right. Stem change and going back to the imperfect endings.
But in the passives, we're not going to see a stem change? Would that be...
No, in the passives, you may see a stem change sometimes, too. But it hasn't really been emphasized because the distinctive feature in the aorist passives, the thing that decides between first and second aorist passives, is the presence or absence of the theta. That's the critical thing. There may be also some other stem change involved too, but the way that you can at the quickest glance tell whether you're looking at a first or second aorist passive is the presence or lack of the theta. Because you see, if you say stem change only, there are also irregular first aorists that also have a stem change. In other words, both some of your first aorist and some of your second aorist will have stem changes. So if you're using stem change as your criterion, that alone will not be able to tell you between first and second aorist. Maybe to illustrate, looking at some of the example words we had. We have some irregular first aorist passives where we did have some stem changes with those. We haven't had any with real radical stem changes, but I guess elamphthane, for example, from lambano. Lambano became elamphthane. Now that's a first aorist because you do have the theta on there. But there's been a stem change, quite a radical one, in fact. And, of course, lego, you know, erethane, that's a total stem change, but it's still a first aorist because it's got the theta on it. It's theta eta nu. Whereas, let's see, which one of these? I guess none of these have a real radical stem change, these second aorist passives. But the feature about the second aorist passive, at least in the forms we've had so far, we're not seeing a real violent stem change. We're just seeing a second aorist. In other words, basically what you've had in most of these forms is just no theta. I suppose the copto here could be considered a stem change because you go to just P instead of P tau. So there's a slight stem change there. Crupto, the same thing. But both of them have basically a stem change, both first aorist and second aorist. But the difference between first and second aorist is the presence or lack of the theta. The ones that have a theta are the first aorist, and the ones that don't are the second.
So stem change is not even part of the definition?
No, it's not really even part of the definition because of the fact that stem changes can occur for both. Not to say that you won't have stem changes, sometimes you will. And if you examine that chart in the back on those principal parts, you can look down through the chart and you can kind of see which ones you're going to have. It might be instructive for us just for a moment to turn to that and take a look at it for just a moment so that you can see a little bit more about what is entailed here. And look at that sixth principal part. On page 330, the first verb here we have ago, the sixth principal part, the very last one, the aorist passive there as it's listed, is eichthane. Now, would that be considered a first or second aorist passive? Yeah, it'd be first aorist passive because of the theta. And there's no real stem change here. There's phonological changes that you've come to predict by now. Okay, now look at the next one, hyreo. We've got hyrethane, and that is a stem change basically because you've got an iota subscript on that thing now and at least the slight stem change, but it's still first aorist because of the theta there. Okay, following down, most all of these in the first column here are first aorist, even though of course we've got some pretty good stem changes in some of them, like gnosko down there. We've got egnosthane, got a stem change there. The iota is completely gone between the gamma and the nu, and the kappa's gone. So we have a stem change, but it's still first aorist because the theta is there, theta eta nu. With the next verb, grapho, of course, we've got a second aorist because there's no theta there. Going back down the column here some more, let's see, looks like we've got first aorist in all the rest of this first column. You can see the first aorist predominate. We've got crupto again down there on about the middle of the next page. At crubane, there's a second aorist. And there aren't very many of these. The next page. These aren't all the verbs in Greek, by the way. I think you knew that. But We've got trepo on the middle of the next page, and it becomes etrapane. Etrapane. There's one that has a stem change, but it's second aorist. A stem change and second aorist. And we've had lots of stem changes that are first aorist. And trepho becomes etrophane. There's a similar stem change. And it's got the phi there and no theta. And tribo, etribane, that's also a second aorist. And phino, we've got ephanane, that's a second aorist. You see, because there's no theta there. And we do have a stem change there too. The iota's dropped out. So, in other words, what you can see is we've got stem changes for both first and second aorists, but the second aorists are determined primarily by the fact that there is no... I guess I missed one up here. There was spero became esparane, and stelo became estalane. So there's a couple up there, too, that are... Strepho becomes estrophane. So those are also second aorists.
You said pharo is a...
It was spero.
Oh.
Yeah, it's further up. Pharo is the first aorist, but it's a very, very irregular first aorist. Inechthane. So you've got such a radical stem change that most people is probably even derived from a different verb. And then you've got, but you do have your theta there, so it would be considered an irregular first aorist.
So then again, in the active, the second aorist.
Right. This one's also second aorist in the active. And sometimes they're first aorist in the active and second aorist in the passive. Sometimes they're second aorist in the active and first aorist in the passive.
But it looks like it has the first and second aorist.
Oh, yes. For pharo, yes, it's got both forms there. So one would be considered second aorist, the other would be considered an irregular first aorist. Anenkon and anenka. I think they gave us anenka, didn't they, in your earlier? They didn't even mention this other one. So as far as you know now, it's just an irregular first aorist. I think they probably decided to use that because there aren't very many verbs to the irregular first aorist, so they wanted to kind of give you as many as they could. Okay. But that's what this chart's all about. You'll become more familiar with this principal parts of verbs next year. But for now, we want to get a working knowledge of what's happening. Okay, are there any questions on first on the futures, middle, and passive? Future, middle, and passive forms. So your future passive is built on the sixth principal part, just like the aorist passive. And whatever irregularities the aorist passive has will be carried into the future passive. Future passive is a form that's not used real frequently, but it is very easy to recognize because, again, you've got this eta sigma. Whether or not you've got the theta before or not, you've got an eta sigma and then an ending on it. It's real easy to recognize this form in the text. So future passive is one of the easiest to recognize as well, but again, it's not used all that frequently. Yes, Mike?
I wouldn't bring it up, but it doesn't say it. So a future passive will also carry in stem changes.
Yes, right. It'll carry any stem change because it's built on that principal part. So whatever stem change occurred, in addition to, the lack or the presence of the theta will also be carried into the future passive. That's precisely why you build it on that stem, because you will automatically have any stem changes that are involved. Okay? So for anenka, for example, or something of that nature, enechthane, that would be carried into the future passive, enechthesomai, you see, or you drop the augment off. And, I guess in that one, it's hard to know what's the augment and what isn't, but... there's whatever irregularities are going to be carried on into the future passive. Okay, then deponent verb, section 137. This is an area that has in the past generated some confusion, so we'll try to do the best we can with it here. It's not that confusing in itself. There's no new forms to learn, in other words. We don't have any new forms to learn. It's just that there are instances in which forms that look middle or passive are going to have active meaning. And that's what are known as deponent verbs. And unfortunately, some of the most common verbs fall into this category. So, some Greek verbs have no active forms, but have middle or passive forms, sometimes both, which are syntactically active. In other words, they're functioning in sentence structures that are associated with active verb forms, and that taking direct objects and that type of thing. That is, they are used to indicate meanings which would be expressed in English by verbs in the active voice. These verbs are called deponent. The most frequently occurring deponent verb is ginomai, which is one of the most frequently occurring verbs, period. And it's an equative verb. And look at the various translations for ginomai. Become, come to be, originate, arise, come about, be made, happen, take place, come to pass. Okay, quite a range. And that range comes from the various contexts in which the verb is used and the way that English idiom translates it. It's not that it really means all these things necessarily. Okay, the principal parts are as follows. The present form is ginomai. Now, the omai ending, of course, is what you've looked at for the present passive or middle or passive ending. So these are passive forms, middle or passive forms. But it's got it's the active, present active meaning. So the present is ginomai, the future is genesomai, excuse me, which looks like this future passive that we just looked at, but you'll see it's got active meaning. The aorist middle form is egenomein, and the aorist passive form is egenethane. Both of these in this particular verb have active meaning, and they're synonymous. So even though the form looks like a middle or a passive, the meaning will be active. So the aorist middle and aorist passive forms of this verb are synonymous. Both mean became, came to be, etc. So this verb is somewhat peculiar in that it has both aorist middle and aorist passive forms, but there's no difference between the meanings of these forms. At least that's what the claim is. There might be some slight shade of difference or something none of the textbooks that I've looked at makes any argument that there's any difference. But there are some verbs that have an aorist middle form and an aorist passive form, and they have different meaning. When we get to me verbs later on, we'll see that situation. There's some verbs that will have an aorist middle form, maybe there'll be a deponent verb and they'll have an aorist middle and an aorist passive, and they both got active meaning, but the meaning may be a different, you know, translated by a different verb in English or something like that. So we'll cover those peculiarities when they arise, and not take upon ourselves more than sufficient for the day is the evil thereof, I guess. But here, egenomein and egenethane have no difference in meaning, but they're active meaning. By that I mean this. The form looks like a middle or passive, but the translation of it in English is like an active. So-and-so became such-and-such. You see, look at the examples here. Matthew 13:53. Egeneto hote etelesen ho Jesus. It came to pass when Jesus finished. Okay, it came to pass. Egeneto. It came to pass. It happened, and so forth, such that. And this is kind of this isn't perhaps the best example because you don't have a direct object and so forth here, but this is being used in an active meaning. It came to pass. It happened when Jesus finished. Here's a better example. Egenomen ego diakonos. I became a minister. Okay, here's our normal equative structure that we would expect to see in an equative verb. Two nominatives joined together by an equative verb. I became a minister. Ego, nominative, I, and diakonos, nominative, minister. And here we see an active type of meaning associated with this. I became a minister. So the one who's doing, the one who is speaking is performing the action in a sense. Although you can see now that because to become is almost got a middle kind of a connotation to it. Because when you become something, you may be involved in the action yourself of becoming. You may make decisions to do something, so forth. But you're also being affected yourself by the decisions. It's almost got a reflexive idea contained in the meaning of the verb. And that may give you some logic, at least, behind the reason why you're seeing middle-type forms or passive-type forms for a verb that's got what we might call active meaning, at least syntactically. But it's not all that simple. And that's... Now, for this particular verb, you can see some of this type of a reflexive idea. Some of these other verbs that we'll see that are deponent, a little bit harder to see that if it's there. Okay, humes mimetai hemon egenethete. There's an aorist passive form. The one above was an aorist middle form, but it's got active meaning. This one's an aorist passive form with active meaning. You became our imitators. You became our imitators. So we've got a second person plural. Aorist passive form here, but it's being translated became. In other words, of course, you can't even get a passive idea out of the word become in English. You were become our imitators, I guess. That doesn't really make any sense anyway. Yes?
That almost seems to have a perfect sense because it still is passive in nature. It's not present, is it? These aorist translations?
Oh, yeah, still, it's still past. Yeah, became. In other words, if you wanted a present form, you'd use a form of ginomai, and that would give you, you are becoming our imitators, or something like that. You become, or you are becoming. This is you became. So it's, you've got, you still got the tense idea there. You still got, you know, past versus present. You see, the present ginomai here is still present, and genesomai is still future, and tense idea, and the aorist is still aorist, tense idea. But the voice is what's, is what the problem is. The forms are looking like they're passives, when they've got active type meaning, or at least in English we translate with an active verb. And this particular verb is hard to say they really have active meaning. They're equative verbs, and equative verbs are kind of a separate category all by themselves. It's hard to call them active or passive. It's hard to call the verb to be, for example, an active verb or a passive verb. If you are something, then you know, it's not so much an action that you're performing, but it's a state that you're in. It's real hard to describe a state as being active or passive. So, syntactically, I suppose we could define it as active because it has the same kinds of sentence structures that we're familiar with these types of verbs. But as far as meaning is concerned, it's a little bit hard to do that. If you define it as the performer of the action, who performs an action of being, it's a little bit hard to define it that way. So I think with the verb ginomai, you can begin to see a little bit of logic to the fact that it's got these passive forms. In other words, to the Greek, he may not be even be thinking or worried about whether he's looking at a passive form or an active form. That's the meaning that the word has always had, and it's a very appropriate type of an ending for that type of meaning that they're trying to express, because it's almost got a middle idea in it. Now, with some of these other verbs, though, it may be not so easy to see any connection, any such connection. Some of these I think you can, others are a little bit more difficult. Okay. But the big thing is, you're not going to see an active form for this. In other words, you won't see gino or something like that with an omega. There isn't any such form. Ginomai is your present form. So you won't find what you normally associate with active forms. So the nice thing about deponent verbs is that the paradigms are smaller because you don't have the active forms. And you've got passive forms, but they've got active meaning. But the bad thing about it is trying to remember which form is which. And you're seeing passive-like forms and translating them in an active way. Now, ginomai is one that you see so frequently, though, that I doubt that there's going to be any real problem with it. After you've done some translating and so forth, you see ginomai all the time, and you always see it this way, and so it doesn't present that huge of a problem. Okay, any questions there on ginomai? Now, the main thing there is that both these aorists, both aorist middle and aorist passive, are synonymous, and they give an active type of meaning, became. Okay, section 138. Some verbs are only partly deponent. That is, they lack active forms in one or more tenses, but not in all tenses. And these are the ones that are harder to maybe see intuitively. And maybe it's not even worth the effort to try to see it intuitively. Try to see why you've got a passive type form. Now, ginomai is deponent all across the board, you see. In the present, in the future, in both aorist forms, you've got either middle or passive forms expressing active meaning. But many verbs are deponent only partly. Look at erchomai, for example. And this is, again, another important verb to come. Erchomai, we have the present, it's deponent. It's erchomai. You've got the omai ending, not erko, but erchomai. In the future, it's also deponent, eleusomai. We have quite a stem change here, and we have the middle or passive ending. But in the aorist, it's aelthone, and that's your normal second aorist active form. Second aorist, of course, because you got that omicron nu ending. It's got a stem change, but it is an active form. It's not a passive form. In other words, if it was aorist middle, what ending would it have? It was a aorist middle. Say a first aorist middle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, yeah. Omein if it was second aorist middle. And amein if it was a first aorist middle. Okay? And if it was an aorist passive, then you'd have the eta type endings. But it doesn't. So it's an aorist active form. Second aorist active form. But so it looks fine in the aorist. You know, in other words, it's what you expect. But in the present and the future, the verb is deponent. Now, come, of course, is an intransitive verb, so that may have some bearing on it. It doesn't take an object. So you would never really have... Suppose the verb had active forms for the... And see, notice it says aorist passive, none. See, you can't really make the verb's meaning is such that you don't... You know, like they gave the example, you can't say home was come by the dog. You know, you can say the dog came home, but you can't say home was come by the dog. At least not in English, it makes sense. And in Greek, the same problem exists. You don't have a passive meaning for the verb come. And so there may be some logic to that. They can use the passive forms and not be losing anything. Of course, the question is, you could have used active forms and then just forget about the passive forms. But apparently there's some suggestion of a reflexive idea. When you come, it's usually got your own interest involved and so forth too. Perhaps that may be what is being seen. Regardless of what's being seen or not being seen, though, these are the forms. Erchumai is deponent, you see. So you can do all kinds of philosophizing, but that's what the form is. So, you know, you can forget about all the philosophizing, just memorize the form and you'll be all right. Okay? So in fact, I don't think there's any common, there's only an epsilon that's common between the future form and the present form. And in the aorist form, there's nothing in common at all. So that's what the verb erchomai looks like, and it is a very common verb. Okay, so erchomai is deponent in the present and future, and hence also in the imperfect, which is formed in the present stem. In other words, whatever happens in the present will also happen in the imperfect, because the imperfect is built on the present stem. And so erchomai being deponent in the present will also be deponent in the imperfect. Okay. But it's not deponent in the aorist. This important verb is suppletive in its formation. Remember what suppletion was? We talked about various ways that words are inflected. Suppletion was where it was so completely changed that you hardly even recognized it. Well, that's what happens here. And there's not even just a stem change. They talked about infixes and suffixes, prefixes, infixes, and so forth. And suppletion. Suppletion is a complete transformation where it's almost a different root entirely. Okay, section 139. The most important verbs which are deponent or partly deponent are as follows. Now, of this list, you might note the first, all but the last two, you'll need to know for this test coming up. So don't worry about the last two, because they're not really as frequently used. But the first, five of them, poriumai, decomai, lambano, manthano, and estio. You might note those and commit them to memory, and commit these forms to memory as far as what happens here. So let's look at them. Por you, omai, is deponent in the present, of course, because you've got that omai ending. So you're, and it means to go or depart. Future, por you, somai, that's a somewhat regular, as far as its base is concerned. You're just adding a sigma to the present, which you expect, but again, it's deponent in the future. You've got the omai ending. There's no aorist in the New Testament, so we don't need to worry about that. Just draw a blank there. And the aorist passive form, eporuthein, has active meaning. Eporuthein. So when you see eporuthein, you would translate it not was a... I guess maybe you can't even get a... I guess you could say in a certain sense with a direct object in that verb, but you wouldn't say was departed, but departed. In other words, if you saw eporuthein, that would mean I departed, not I was departed. Okay, we can say I was deported, but not that I was departed. Okay, so it's got an aorist passive form, but it's got an active meaning. Then dechomai, we have deponent present because it's got passive or middle or passive form. Dexomai in the future, that's the stem's predictable, but again it's deponent in the future. Edexamen is your aorist form, and what kind of form does that look like? An aorist active, middle or passive? The form alone now.
Middle.
Because that off of, the amen is a tip off there. It's a middle form, but it's got active meaning. So it's the form that you're going to use when you want to when you want to say I received. See, edexamen is I received, not I was received, or I received myself, but I received. But you can see though that the meaning of the word receive. See, when you receive something, you're initiating an action, you know, by making a decision to receive it. But the action that you initiate is affecting you. So the meaning of the word itself has got a middle idea. And it's not a surprise then to see middle forms here in Greek to describe that idea. The very act of receiving is one that is really a middle kind of an action. And lambano, same thing, take or receive. See, when you take something or receive something, it's got a middle idea. So no surprise then to find, I suppose the surprise is to find that it's got an active form here for the present, lambano. The future is, it's leipsomai, so we have a deponent future form. And then we have elabon in the aorist, going back to an active form again, a second aorist active. And then in this particular verb, there is a passive form for it. Elamphthane is an aorist passive, and the footnote indicates that this has passive meaning also. The aorist passive and future passive forms of this verb are also passive in meaning. So you might want to make a note of that, or even, you know, right up there, right by the footnote, passive meaning here for the aorist passive form. This is what's a little tricky. That's when they throw one at you that really does have a passive meaning. And elamphthane does. So the elamphthane would mean I was received or I was taken. I was received or I was taken. Whereas elabon would be I received or I took. So this verb does have its normal constituent in the aorist passive. But the future form, leipsomai, is deponent. I can't give you any philosophy for it or any, you know, logic for that. Manthano means to learn. And in manthano, it's got an active form for the present. The future, again, is deponent. Mathesomai. So there's been a stem change there, too. The nu is dropped out. And mathesomai looks very much like an aorist passive as far as its form is concerned. And then emathon is the aorist, and that goes back to an active form. And there's no aorist passive. Estheo means to eat. The future is phagomai, believe it or not. And many feel that came just from a different verb completely. But it is deponent. And ephagon, same stem as the future, but now we've got an active form for the aorist. So those five there are ones that you want to learn the forms for. And just learn these principal parts. The endings, of course, are going to follow suit. And then there's a couple more here, just for note. Archomai means to begin. We have arxomai, it's deponent in the present, deponent in the future. Erxamen, it's deponent in the aorist, because we've got a middle form here for your aorist active meaning. And then we do have an erkthane, which is passive in meaning also. They didn't include this in the footnote. You probably should have, but erkthane does have a passive meaning. It was begun, so forth, or I was begun, something like that. Only a certain number of subjects will be used there. And then ginosko is active in the present. It's got active forms, but the future is deponent, ginosomai, and the aorist goes back to your active forms. And they've got a footnote on this one because the paradigm for this verb is unusual. Egnon, you've got omega nu here. You're not used to seeing omega nu for an ending for anything. But this is, he gives you lesson 46 later on, almost at the end of the book, will give you the full paradigm for the aorist of this verb. So that's why I'm not going to require this on the test. You wouldn't know how to make the rest of the endings. And agnosthane, that does have passive meaning also. So you've got an aorist, you've got a distinction between active and passive meaning in the aorist anyway. But don't worry about those last two. So the first five there, though, the first five, and then ginomai and erkomai also, in section 137 and 138, those two you should commit to memory. Because those two are used so frequently. Okay, any questions?
Well, everything on this list has active meaning, but the ones you told us have passive.
Right. Yeah, everything on the list has active meaning, except for, I guess, of the five that you had, the only thing that doesn't have active meaning would be on lambano, that elamphthane, the aorist passive form there, that has passive meaning. But everything else is going to have active meaning, regardless of whether it's got a passive or an active form. Okay, and then of course those last, if you want to complete your notes, archomai and ginosko, the aorist passives on those also have a passive meaning. I suppose the way you can remember it is the verbs that have both an aorist form and an aorist passive form, in other words, they've got two separate forms in the aorist, will have a distinction between aorist active and aorist passive meaning. And if it's only got one form, like poriumai has only got one form, it's got an aorist passive looking form, but there's no aorist form, that's going to get active meaning. And lambano had both an aorist active form and an aorist passive form, so the passive form is going to get its passive meaning. In other words, if you've got two forms there, they are trying to make a distinction between active and passive. I guess the exception to that would be ginomai, which has eganomain and eganathane, and they're both active meaning. We've kind of treated that one all by itself anyway. Okay.
How about the we want to, for instance, to have the regular, the present, like the SEO that has the regular.
Yeah, that's going to have. No, no, it doesn't go the other direction. In other words, you won't have active forms with passive meaning. You'll have passive forms with active meaning, but not vice versa. So, fortunately, you don't have to worry about that. Okay. Estheo is just, it's got an active form, it's going to have active meaning. Right. But the unusual thing is phagomai has a passive form, but active meaning. Middle or passive form, but active meaning. Okay.
Does that mean that there will not be any present passive form? Does that mean it's
deformed
in passive?
Yes, you don't have anything left to use. You mean estheo. Now, in estheo, you could conceivably have a passive form in the present. I doubt if you have one. In other words, the form still exists. In other words, when you've got a verb that's deponent and you're using the passive form for active meaning, now you don't have any passive form to deal with. But if you've got a verb like estheo that has you're using an active form, there's theoretically still the passive form that could be used. Estheomai, for example, would be a possible form. But I doubt that you'd actually see it used. In some cases, you might. Some unusual verbs, you might see both an active passive form, but I doubt that you would in this case. You just have to look at that's part of the reason for looking at those principal parts, and for finding out what the thing's going to do. But you may have noticed on that chart on principal parts, there were a lot of blanks. In other words, there's places where there's no form there printed. And that's the reason is that the form doesn't exist. And part of that is because of deponent verbs, but part of that is because they just never say it that way, or the meaning of the verb is such that it doesn't... you see, for the verb to live, all you've got is future active and aorist active. You don't have any passive forms at all for it to live. You don't say he was lived, you know, okay?
You could say he was eating, or he...
Yes. Well, no, see, he was eating wouldn't be... That would be just an imperfect active form.
He was eaten by...
Yeah. He was eaten, right. That could be said.
You could get a presence, couldn't you?
Yeah. You could theoretically get that. Now, apparently the aorist passive doesn't exist, so the Greek never says he was eaten. They probably would just, you know, in other words, if you never use the passive, they may either use the active or use a different verb or something to get that meaning across. So apparently it doesn't, but you could say he is being eaten, potentially. In other words, it doesn't tell you here that the form doesn't exist for the present passive, middle passive, and it may.
Looking at these principal parts, there's no way, because the principal present, middle, and passive is formed upon the present days.
Yes.
There's no way to ascertain it from the principal.
Well, not completely, no. Usually when you have some deponencies, you can usually tell if the verb is deponent that since it's using its passive form, it's not going to have any other form. But in the case where the verb has got an active form, you don't know for sure whether the passive or middle form is ever used. So that's just a matter of inspection primarily. You know, if we were setting up to try to speak Greek, we would be more concerned about what forms possibly do exist. Since we're setting up to translate the New Testament, then we're mainly concerned with what forms actually exist there. And once we see the form, we know what to do with it. So these principal part charts aren't intended to be exhaustive. They're just going to tell you how to make the forms and whether or not certain forms exist or not. Some of them are going to be dropped out there, and you'll know. But in other cases like this one with estheo, for example you raised, I think the only way you could really find out whether it's used in the passive, present passive, or present middle is to look up the predicted form, see if it's there. In other words, look up estheomai and see if you find it. Okay. Or just check the concordance and see if it's ever used that way. Check the Greek concordance. Okay. Any other questions on these deponent verbs? All right, then section 140. Yes, Steve?
You know what deponent means?
Someone looked it up. I think it means laid aside. So the idea is you laid aside some of the forms, and you're using other forms in their place. So deponent verb is one that's got some of its forms laid aside, thrown aside. What was that? Yes, that's probably... I never thought about it that way, but it's probably coming... Deposit probably comes from the same root. I don't know if that's a Latin or a Greek root. Sounds more Latin. The verb eimi. The most frequently occurring verb in the New Testament is eimi, which, like its English equivalent to be, is irregular. And this is rather typical. Almost every language I've ever been associated with has an irregular verb for the verb to be. The Hebrew verb for to be has got just about everything bad with it you can have. You know, it's got hey in the front and hey in the back and a wow in the and a yod in the middle. and all of those there have peculiarities as far as paradigms are concerned. And the verb eimi in Greek also, if you look at the paradigm for it. Now, there's one nice thing about it. All you have is a present, imperfect, and future. There's no aorist forms for the verb to be. There are no perfect forms or anything like that. This is the entire paradigm for the verb to be. These are all the forms there are. Okay? So that may be encouraging, but what's discouraging is that the ending systems and so forth are not exactly what you've seen before. So it's kind of like a mix between a me verb and an omega conjugation and a little bit of everything else. It's got strange features to it. So it's hard to, you can't really put this into a nice clean category with other verbs because it's got so many peculiarities to it. So the only way to deal with it is just memorize the forms for it. So you need to learn the paradigm for the verb to be because it's used so frequently. Especially the present forms you should be familiar with, and you'll want to learn the whole paradigm. So the first person singular is a me, and see, we've been used to seeing things with omegas in the first person singular present, or if it's deponent, at least an omai or something, but a me, that's a little bit different. And then a, and then estin or esti, the optional nu there. I guess he didn't note that, but that is an optional nu there. So you may just want to put a light parenthesis around it or something. You'll see it both ways. You'll see it more frequently estin, but once in a while I see it with just SD. And then S-men, we are. Esta, you are, you plural are. And AC or asin, again, this has got an optional nu on it. But I think the preponderance of usage is with the nu, so once in a while you'll see it without it. And maybe why he didn't separate out and make a big distinction about it. The imperfect forms, we've got amen, ace, ain, amen, excuse me, or ametha, two possible forms there, or ate and ason. Now these forms look something like the aorist passive endings, but not completely. If you look at your paradigm for the aorist passive endings, that was ain, ace, a, amen, ate, ason. Well, the amen, ata, ason, the plural forms are pretty much according to that scheme. But we have amen for the imperfect first person singular, where we would have had ain for the aorist passive ending. And the ace, well, that one fits pretty well, except with the accents. But the ain, you can get confused here, because the ain here is third person singular in the verb to be, but it was the first person singular in the ending of the other. So you really have to learn this separately. You can maybe remember there's some parallels to it or something, but you can't just take it straight across or you'll get trouble. The future isn't quite as bad because the endings at least are what we've seen before. So we just got a completely different stem. If you just take the stem S, epsilon sigma, and then S-O-M-I, S-A, S-A-T-I, S-O-M-I-T-A, S-S-T-A, S-O-N-T-I. There's our good old familiar middle and passive, present middle and passive endings. So omai, a, etai, omatha, esta, ontai. Those are nice and regular. So that's the form of the verb to be. These forms should be committed to memory. Ami and ginomai are the most important equative verbs. Okay, well, that's the end of chapter 18, and that's basically the end of the most common verb forms we're going to be dealing with. All we have to do now to our verb systems is add our perfect and pluperfect forms later on, and then we'll be getting into other moods. We've got all the voices down now, but we're going to get into other moods. The subjunctive mood, the imperative mood, optative mood, and a few things like that. But those things aren't used quite as frequently. Subjunctive, I think we'll pay more attention to. Optative, you can maybe just look at the forms real quickly and not worry too much about it because it's used so very infrequently. Okay. Now what I'd like to do before we go any further, we'll be having a quiz coming up here before the end of the semester, and we'll decide exactly what's a good date for that. But before I do, I want to do some review. This quiz will be covering our verb forms, and it'll be just focusing on verbs, and it'll be really covering chapters 12 and 13, and then chapters 16 to 18. So for chapters 14 and 15, we're dealing with those hutos and akenos and autos and so forth, so we weren't talking about verbs there. But chapter 12 and 13 dealt with our basic present aorist and imperfect form and so forth, and chapters 16 through 18 here have been dealing with our our passive and middle forms and deponent verbs and so forth. So that's what the test will be on. So before we do that, I'd like to put on the board a complete summarization of all these verb forms that we've seen and give you some handy charts that may be able to see, enable you to see relationships between these various verb forms. And we've only got 5 minutes today, so I don't know if I can really get any of these full charts on the board. I don't know if it's worth starting out with these or not, but maybe I can just point out a few things. I can show you, maybe show you what we're headed for. We'll have two charts like this. And you can set them up the way you want. I kind of color-coded one of these and the other one. This is a chart that just tells you how to basically make the forms. What we'll have here is active, middle, and passive, and the tenses, present, future, imperfect, first aorist, and second aorist. So we've got four basic tenses, except for two separate forms for our aorist. And then we've got three voices. And so what we will do in each one of these categories is put down what the stem will be and what the endings will be for each one of these, and then note any complications that occur. And that way you'll be able to see basically how to form each one of these tense ideas. Then we'll have another chart that gives the endings themselves, the actual ending system. And this chart will just give the first person singular form just to show what system we're dealing with, and then we'll have a label for these various ending systems. So basically, you can see here, and we'll put this on the board next time, but the present, we have stem, blue, and then the endings are primary active, the first of which is omega. In the middle, we have the present base, lu, again, and then we have the endings primary, middle, and passive, omai being the first of those. In the passive, the exact same thing, the present base, lu, and then omai. And I put a little bar across here to tie these two together because they're the exact same form. So middle and passive are the same in the present. In the future, we have future base, which with a regular verb is lu plus a sigma, so loose plus the primary active endings. Future middle, loose, plus the present base plus sigma, plus the primary middle and passive endings, oh my. You have the same endings here. And then the passive form is built on the aorist passive base, sixth principal part, and we're below lu, which is present base plus theta is sigma. You get lu base, and then the endings are the primary middle and passive endings. So when you look at this, you kind of see where all the parallels are, in both directions. Going down to the imperfect, the same thing all the way across, and the first and second aorist. And about the only other information you need, as far as predictable forms are concerned, would be the charts that indicate the phonological changes for adding a sigma or before theta in the aorist passive. Then this shows you the various ending systems: the present active, the use of the primary, what we call the primary active endings. And so I just wrote the whole forms here and then put a box around the actual ending system. And you see primary active also used in the future. So I use the same color for the same, both of the exact same endings. And those two have the same endings, but nothing much else does. Well, I guess these two here, of course, then also. And you could also do some, draw some lines of connection between endings that are somewhat similar. For example, in the imperfect active, we've got eluon, and we've got on, es, e, omen, ete, on. If you compare that with the aorist active endings, they're pretty much the same kind of system except a thematic vowel change. We have a, as, e, amen, ata, an. So if you just substitute the epsilon and the omicron for an alpha over here, you have the basically the same system. So try to getting some parallel ideas here. Same thing with the imperfect middle and passive. Omen, u, eto, omata, esta, onto. The aorist middle has amen, o, ato, amata, asta, anto. So you can see some parallels between those. And then your aorist passive endings are not too far away from what we saw in the imperfect active. Except you got eta's all the way through. So you just try to do everything you can to see parallels between those. Now, however you want to set this up is up to you. I'll give you the whole paradigms in the whole works here, and then you may work out some schemes yourself. See, I color-coded these. I should have used a better coloring system here, but anyway, these endings are the same. We have omai, e, etai, omata, esta, ontai, meaning the primary, middle, and passive endings. They occur on the present, middle, and passive. They occur on the future middle, and they occur in the future passive. So there's really four places where these occur. We just lumped these two together as one. So it's a way to kind of see what you're looking at, and it's really good to have some charts like this available. And this is kind of if you look at Dane and Manti's chart, then you're going to have the perfect and the pluperfects and a lot of other things there, the optatives and subjunctives and all that. And you look at that, and it's almost too much. So it'd be good to have this form that a paradigm that'll just deal with your indicative and deal with that separately, at least for now. Okay. We can do the exercises for lesson 18 for next Tuesday. We'll go through those and then also put this chart on the board. I'm not sure. Let me see. Why don't you go ahead and do 18A and B, because C is rather lengthy. It takes some time. Just do 18A and B. We'll go through those next time, and then we'll have enough time to put all these charts on the board, and then we'll do C the next day. So.
I've been meaning to ask you about it. Snag that chart off the wall that's in there.
Oh, okay. I don't think there's any problem with it. In fact, we tried to track it down, you know, see if we could still get it, but apparently it's 1949 is when it was done. So.
I am planning on running it down to the copy machine.
Can you get a copy? Can you get the place where the colors can be copied and so forth, too?
Colors?
Yeah.